First, more people are getting vaccinated, and that's got people thinking about what they can do after they're vaccinated. And that's brought a lot of attention to the idea of having proof of vaccination that, say, a business could use to let you into their restaurant, event venue, airplane, you name it. Some businesses, some universities like the idea because it gives them a fast, easy way to tell if customers or students are immunized. Conservatives have spoken out against it, saying people who choose to not get the vaccine could be discriminated against. And there are concerns about privacy and how the data could be used, even from supporters of the concept. Earlier this week, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the Biden administration is going to remain on the sidelines.
The government is not now, nor will we be supporting a system that requires Americans to carry a credential. There will be no federal vaccinations database and no federal mandate requiring everyone to obtain a single vaccination credential.
Psaki said it would be up to the private sector to decide whether to have a so-called vaccine passport system. Our next guest says it's probably coming at some point to airports, restaurants, stadiums, and or other businesses. In fact, it's already being implemented in other parts of the world. So what do we know about how they could work? You could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the idea of showing proof of vaccination to do stuff? What about it bothers you? Or does being able to travel and dine out make it worthwhile? If you own a business, would you require a verified immunization for customers or employees? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Maren McKenna is a journalist who covers public health, global health, and food policy. She's a senior fellow at the Center for the Study of Human Health at Emory University and author of several books, including Big Chicken, The Incredible Story of How Antibiotics Created Modern Agriculture and Changed the Way the World Eats. She recently wrote about vaccine passports for Wired. Maren, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, as we just heard, no federal requirement for a so-called vaccine passport, still up in the air, which businesses, who's going to do this in the U.S. Where in the world are we seeing things like this starting to happen now, though?
So there's a lot of places where this is either already being implemented or it's being looked at. And that includes some places in the U.S., which we can talk about in a minute, but let me tell you about the rest of the world. So the place that's probably gone furthest is the country of Israel, where they have what they call a green pass. They rolled this out about a month, 6 weeks ago. And if you show that pass, which is actually an app, that constitutes your proof of vaccination, and it lets you get into things like restaurants and gyms and concert venues with some lesser degree of the things that we've all been enduring during the pandemic, like social distancing and mask wearing and so forth. It's a certification to the place that you're going into that you're safe to have around. There are other places in the world like Estonia and Iceland where there's not a single app, but if you can show proof of vaccination, you're allowed to get across the border now when the borders are otherwise shut. And there's a whole bunch of other nations that are looking at the idea of having some kind of vaccine passport or digital certification, the European Union, the African Union. There's a long list maintained by a computer think tank in the United Kingdom that is tracking probably at least two dozen nations that are looking at this.
So bring it home, to the United States. What is in the works here around the country?
So the place that's gone furthest in the U.S. is New York State, which last month created a thing called the Excelsior Pass. And the Excelsior Pass is an app, but it can also be paper-based, that links to the state's vaccination registry for COVID. Every state has, because the states have been in charge in the United States of giving the vaccines, every vaccination gets reported back to the state, and the states have immunization registries. So this app draws on the immunization registry to encode your vaccination status in a QR code. And then if you're going into something like a concert venue or a ballpark or a restaurant, there's a parallel app created for those places that lets them scan the QR code, confirm that according to the state, you've been vaccinated, and then you're home free.
Have we seen establishments saying, show us the code or you can't come in? I think that's what people are looking at, wondering, hopeful for, or worried about.
So, I mean, that I think is that is the concern that people have. I am not aware of whether that's happened in New York yet, because I'm not clear on how many establishments have adopted this yet. It was used at Madison Square Garden for some kind of game. I'm sorry, I don't know which one. And they also were going to use it for one of the major sports venues in Brooklyn. But moving it out to smaller establishments like your neighborhood restaurant feels like that's going to take a while.
One big concern, conservatives have brought it up, others as well, is who gets to do what with this information? As with any data, what concerns are there for our privacy with these so-called vaccine passports?
So this is a big concern. And, you know, comment on this issue breaks down into a couple of different sort of buckets. But one of the buckets is if this is inevitable, that now is the time that we have to worry about the ethics of it, the equity of it, and the privacy of it. And privacy is obviously a huge concern, because if you are recording some aspect of your health into an app, and we know that the digital world can be leaky, is your that information about you going to get somewhere else, going to escape the privacy concerns of that app? Now, we're kind of unused to this discussion in the United States because, for one thing, we don't have a national immunization registry. And for another, we don't have a national health plan the way, for instance, they do in Canada or in much of Europe, where your records are all held in one place anyway. We have a very patchwork system. And so the idea of having stuff in one place is unfamiliar to us. And that question of how the safeguards that have to be built around this in order to make these both useful and not also risky is something that a lot of tech firms are diving into right now.
Talking to Maren McKenna, she wrote a piece for Wired about the idea of ways of proving that you've been vaccinated against COVID-19, so-called vaccine passports, whether brought about by a state government, private business, a lot of open questions about what could be done with such things. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We've seen at the state government level, Maren, some Republicans in particular speaking up here in Wisconsin. A couple of Republicans have put in a bill in the state legislature that would say, hey, private businesses and the government, you can't issue these. The governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, threatened to do something. And Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed an executive order saying no government-mandated vaccine passports. Here's a listen to Governor Abbott of Texas.
These vaccines are always voluntary and never forced. Government should not require any Texan to show proof of vaccination and reveal private health information just to go about their daily lives.
So a couple different tracks here, Maren, saying government can't do this, and some saying government and private business can't do this. What are you seeing when it comes to a sort of preemptive pushback against this idea?
Well, in fact, there are situations in which governments already do require vaccination, right? I mean, the idea, this is being called a vaccine passport, even though passport is probably a bad name for it, because one of its major purposes, it's not a single thing, there's going to be many of them probably, but one of the major purposes is to open up international travel. And you already cannot get into some countries in the world unless you can show proof of vaccination against certain diseases. The one that's most regulated by the World Health Organization via what's usually called the yellow card, the International Certificate of Vaccination or Prophylaxis, is a card against yellow fever that you'll need if you want to travel in most of sub-Saharan Africa. Similarly, here in this country, you can't send your child to school unless your child has been vaccinated against certain childhood diseases, except in rare cases. So the idea that there is no government interest in vaccination and no government influence on vaccination is kind of a false framing. Now, it shouldn't escape our notice that the states where politicians are speaking up against this idea of certification of vaccination are also places where those politicians spoke up against vaccination or against against mask wearing, against the kind of public health measures that would quell the pandemic, choosing instead to focus on the economic impact of closing down around the pandemic. So it kind of makes sense that they are opposed to the idea of certifying the occurrence of vaccination, but that doesn't mean that it's not a possible thing to do.
We're talking about so-called vaccine passports for COVID-19, some form of app or a piece of paper or whatever it might be to show that you've been vaccinated. Some of the issues surrounding them with Maren McKenna, journalist and author. She covers public health, global health, and food policy. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are there places where you think it might be a good idea to have, say, an airline or a restaurant or whatever require that you show proof of vaccination before you show up in their place of work? Do you think governments should be issuing these? Should they be a private thing? How should they be regulated? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the idea of proof of COVID-19 vaccination, often called vaccine passports. Misleadingly, our guest says, the Biden administration says it wouldn't be involved directly in such a program, says the private sector should decide whether to require people to show proof of vaccination to enter businesses and whatnot. Maren McKenna is with us. She's a senior fellow at the Center for the Study of Human Health at Emory University, author of several books. She wrote about this topic for Wired. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the idea. We'll go to your calls now. Steve is with us in Friendship. Steve, hi.
Hello. I was just saying it could be used as a form of discrimination. For example, if I don't have my vaccine because I'm working like two jobs and stuff, I don't have the time to go to the doctor. It could be, I'm sorry, you can't come to the place to get something because you don't have your vaccine. It could be very discriminatory.
Steve, thanks for calling in and sharing that. Maren, is that a concern?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a valid concern, especially now when we're still rolling vaccine out. There's whole categories of people who haven't yet been able to be vaccinated in the United States because their age bracket isn't yet being vaccinated in their particular state because, as the caller states, their personal circumstances don't allow them to get to a vaccine site at a good time. We're not yet vaccinating children. There's been some lack of clarity about vaccinating pregnant women. And let's not forget that there are big swaths of the population who have been hesitant about vaccination because in their personal history or in the history of their minority group or racial group, there's been a lot of mistreatment coming from the healthcare system toward them. And therefore they are entitled to think twice about vaccine and to be a bit slow in taking up vaccine. We would not want to make that situation worse. And we need to be very careful about if these vaccine passports are coming, as they do seem to be, given all the tech firms who are working on them. We do need to be careful that they are not inequitable or discriminatory.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Mitch next in Milwaukee. Mitch, hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
Well, I've personally been working during all of this, the pandemic and all that jazz, and I have my two vaccines. I got them as soon as possible. I don't have any sympathy or any sort of guilt as far as, this vaccine passport, if you want to call it that, is concerned. I think everyone should definitely get their vaccine. And if you don't, we'll discriminate against them.
Mitch, thanks for the call. And I think that's an attitude that's out there, man. I know there's also a concern that might drive people further apart and create a bigger wedge in people who are already concerned about vaccines if they feel, attacked in that way.
So, this is the attitudes across the country toward how we approach the pandemic in terms of mask mandates, in terms of vaccination. Those are gulfs that are going to take a while to heal. I don't think the presence or absence of a vaccine passport is going to, it may weight the scale more on one side or another, but is neither going to solve this, nor is it going to make it go away. At the same time, if these vaccination passports or digital certifications were deployed within the United States, as opposed to the international case that we talked about a few minutes ago of allowing people to travel, one thing they might do is open up the economy more. Because people who patronize stores or restaurants or event venues and so forth will feel more safe in coming back if they feel that they're safe inside because certification is being asked of people to enter. So the contention that we need to, that's out there, that we need to do more to open up the economy, these things might actually accomplish that.
Mitch, thanks a lot for calling in. We heard from Kim on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kim writes, if a business chooses to require it for their employees' peace of mind and protection, Kim says, I'll gladly participate, but I'd prefer the government refrain from mandating it. And man, that, at least in many states, is a likely outcome, right? We might see businesses selectively choosing to do something like this, but maybe not, certainly not a federal mandate, maybe not state or local mandates.
So right from the start, as this conversation around vaccine passports is heated up, and it's boiled up with real speed just in the past 10 days or so, the Biden administration has been very careful around this topic, as in that clip that you rolled out at the start of the show and a press conference that happened a few days before that. The message has been, this is not going to be a single federal certification or a federal requirement. But what the Biden administration has asked one of the agencies, the Department of Health and Human Services, to do is to try to get some sort of standards out there, to try to get in front of this development that they can just feel coming from the tech world, to make sure that they are interoperable, that they are equitable, that they're not unfair, and so forth. But I don't think we're going to see in this country a single federal mandate. I just don't think it's going to work.
And briefly, Deborah on the Facebook page writes, if it helps end this pandemic sooner, I'm for it. Once we get beyond COVID, we can throw these cards away. It's just temporary if only everyone would cooperate. Briefly, Barrett, is this something you think would be in for a few months or a year and then we toss them?
I have heard that discussion taking place in the United Kingdom, where they also are talking about creating some form of digital health pass, that this might be something that is a 3-month, 6-month, 1 year, sunsetted in some manner, but it doesn't become an ongoing permanent health record, just as your caller says.
Maren, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Maren McKenna is a journalist who covers public health, global health, and food policy. She's a senior fellow at the Center for the Study of Human Health at Emory University. We talked about the pros and cons of these so-called vaccine passports. Last March, performing arts organizations around the country and in Wisconsin were forced to go dark as gathering audiences in person suddenly became unsafe. Now, more than a year into the pandemic, there's still a long way to go before they'll be able to get back to normal. Bridget Bowden has more.
When the pandemic hit Wisconsin last March, Madison opera director Catherine Smith had some difficult decisions to make. She canceled a concert, then a whole show.
And it was just a whirlwind of telling an awful lot of people all at once.
As the lockdown stretched on, it became clear that it wouldn't be safe to put on one of the company's most popular events, Opera in the Park. So instead, it went virtual. More than 40 singers performed Verdi's Anvil Chorus on video, using household objects for percussion. You can hear them banging on pots and pans, hammering in their yards, and clinking beer bottles.
And it was a massive success. It went live on the day that we would have been in the park and was seen in 49 states and 21 countries, and people had gathered in their backyards to watch it together, socially distanced.
Over the last year, many of Wisconsin's performing arts organizations have had to pivot from putting on events for large in-person audiences to virtual or physically distant performances. Maria Van Lannen, president of the Fox Cities Performing Arts Center, says although it's impossible to replicate exactly what happens on stage, there are still ways to connect with audiences.
What we wanted to make sure is that we continue to deliver those engagement opportunities that tie whatever discussion can be invoked by what's happening in the stage to make a meaningful connection to the community.
In a normal year, the center hosts national Broadway tours like Hamilton and Wicked. In 2020, they hosted video talks with local artists, held virtual panels about social issues, and had a muralist do a live painting performance. But she says it was still a tough year financially. The center received a paycheck protection loan, but still had to furlough 80% of its staff and reduce the pay of others. And Van Lannen says other organizations have been worse off.
Organizations have already announced their closure because they could not weather this storm. And it's heartbreaking to see that happen because they've been underfunded, undersupported by their community for years.
According to the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies, Wisconsin ranks in the bottom two states nationwide for state funding for the arts per capita. The pandemic has not made things easier, and it could get worse before it gets better. Jen Uphoff-Gray is the artistic director at Forward Theater Company in Madison.
We'll be back to all of the production expenses of doing live events, but we will have added the costs of doing things digitally on top of that. We will have added a whole bunch of health and safety protocol expenses, and then combining that with still projected lower than usual ticket sales.
But as the vaccination rate is going up, there's hope for a return to normal in the not-too-distant future. Uphoff-Gray says they're hoping to be able to have a small audience present for their monologue festival in June.
Once people really truly feel safely through the end of this pandemic, whenever it may come, I think that we'll see a real renaissance, both from artists but also from audiences in their desire to experience art communally together.
Until audiences can gather in person, she says the best way to support organizations like hers is to subscribe and buy tickets. Bridget Bowden, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can find more of our coronavirus coverage at WPR.org.